We are now calling a group to discuss women's rights, and we have three witnesses ready to testify. I will ask them to introduce themselves before they give their testimony. Please.
Guten Tag.
Hello. I am here to report on how in Germany a compulsory admission is brought about. My name is Petra Boos. On the 28th of December 1999, after careful consideration, I separated from my husband. On this very same day, we
had
a serious row. And during this row, my husband asked me to leave the home together with the children. I opposed by saying that it would be easier if he left. Well, he defended himself, but finally he did so, and he moved over to my parents. Then a few days intervened. They were quite in order without my husband. That was fine. On a Thursday evening, on the 2nd of December, I was called up by our GP, who told me, Petra, you have to be admitted to the psychiatric hospital. You are a risk to yourself and to others because you are a maniac. You have purchased a Porsche and you own a property in Norwegia, which isn't true. And I asked the doctor, what is your statement based on? I've been told by your husband. Well, I replied, if you believe that I am a risk to myself and to others, it would be his moral obligation to come over to see me. You would never have such a diagnosis from the distance. But he then replied, I'm sorry, I'm very tired. I've been seeing patients all day long. Please come over to see me in my practice. I was quite upset because I posed a risk to myself and to others. My children were with me. I could have done harm to them if I was really a serious risk. Well, I jumped into the car and I drove over to this medical doctor. And well, I was quite upset. I was really sad about this and I was very angry. How could he possibly say such a thing to me? In this state of excitement, I tried to convince him that I'm not a maniac. Well, the crucial point was in 1997, I had a bout of depression in 1997. Now, this doctor concluded simply that in 1997, she was depressed because now she has got to be maniac, because this was the disease of maniac depression. He tried to fix an appointment with a neurologist, and I agreed at first, but then I decided, no, I'm not going to go to the neurologist. He has fixed the appointment, calling her up. I've got a maniac patient, so he just classifies you. He puts a tag on you. And I said, I'm going to look for a psychologist or a psychiatrist. So I did. I looked for a psychiatrist. It was Friday. I had a long conversation with him, and I also brought with me a friend and a psychiatrist certified that I am a normal woman that only is facing this situation of being admitted to a psychiatric hospital, and therefore I was excited. So I received a certificate that I had a stress reaction based on this specific situation. Now, this was on Friday. I thought, fine, you've got this certificate. Nothing will worry you any longer. However, I was wrong. 3 days later, this was on the 6th of December, Santa Claus Day in Germany here, the doorbell rang towards 7 in the East. Santa Claus wore a white clothes. My husband, an ambulance, police were there, And they told me, now you have been, you are being admitted compulsory to the hospital. He reached, the doctor reached out. I refused to greet him. I tried to discuss the issue with them, but to no avail. A policeman told me, I knew him, Peter, now why don't you go with them? In 3 days' time, you'll be back home. Okay, I said, I live in a small village. Rather than being led away handcuffed and being infamous tomorrow, you will rather comply, because in 3 days' time, you'll be back home. However, that did not materialize. I relied upon the psychiatric hospital. I was admitted upon the diagnosis of mania. Nobody in the at the psychiatric hospital questioned this. I always tried to explain that it was simply about money. We've got two children. My husband tries to get the care of our children so as not to be forced to pay for them. All the psychiatrists were male, and probably they could imagine how a male person might go about it. Well, they do it anyway. On the other hand, women can do similar things to men. Anyway, for 6 weeks I was in the section. I was sectioned, so in this closed ward. If I had been told in advance that such things still exist in Germany, I wouldn't have believed it. I tried to explain my case. Nobody listened to me. There were practically no conversations at all. Diagnoses were made upon me, no matter what I did. When I cried because I missed my children, this was about Christmas and New Year's Eve, then I was tagged as depressed. When I relaxed, then I was a maniac. So in my acts, in my file, there is that I was somewhat ironic. I thought, this must be a dream. That's not real. It cannot be. Tomorrow you're going to wake up and it'll be all over. You'll be back home with your children. It took a long time before I realized that this was not a dream. This was reality. Certain things happened. I thought it was a dream, that I had taken my key off the hook and I open the door and walk out. A male nurse had seen me, and he had asked me, hey, Mrs. Boos, what are you doing here? You cannot leave here. Please go back to your room. You're very, very ill. As a symptom of mania is that you do not comply, that you do not realize that you're ill. I'm still deemed sick or ill. According to psychiatrists, I must take lithium for the rest of my life, Lispedal. All in all, I should live in a sheltered home. So you might say I'm pretty well off, but I don't have my children with me. The worst case that I was afraid of has materialized. The doctor told me, you're going to have problems for the custody. Well, I grinned. Let him speak. I'm quite normal. Why should I have custody problems? I've always been a good mother. However, the psychiatrists helped my husband. I have never got rid of this diagnosis. Custody for my children has been assigned to my husband. So I see them very rarely, and that hurts. But I must not become depressed, because if I get depressed, well, somehow you might understand it. I'm a mother who has lost her children. This makes you sad. But if I get depressed, this would be the alternative to my mania, because I'm tagged as depressed maniac. However, I do not want to put up with it. I think that's too simple. I have never purchased a car. I've never purchased any property. And even if I had done so, I was 40 years old. It's my right to buy a Porsche, living on subsidy, well, and then buying a Porsche. This would be a cause of concern, but our financial standing was in order then. And the Porsche effectively has been bought on the 13th of November, 3 weeks prior to the separation. But it was my husband to buy this Porsche, and never did I put my signature on this contract. My husband always wanted to have a Porsche, so he ordered this Porsche. Well,
I would hope at this point to hear the testimony of the other two witnesses whose stories, while not identical, link well, rather than to follow our normal procedure of opening to questions, unless there are some questions about, about not understanding something that was said. There not apparently being any. Let me...
I just would like to ask about
there
the
is
Porsche.
One. Sorry.
I think, for me at least, it wasn't clear how the Porsche business has anything to do with the story.
This Porsche thing, my husband went to the doctor and he served two lies. He said that I had bought such a very expensive car. And in addition, he claimed that I had purchased a piece of land abroad. Two things that simply did not happen. I have an affidavit by the car dealer that I have never ordered such a car, neither prior to it nor afterwards. It doesn't exist at all. It's totally made up. But they didn't even inquire about it. Simply two claims were made by my husband, totally unfounded, and the doctor simply believed it. As a matter of fact, nobody checked it.
Assessment regarding that. How did it influence the doctor's assessment?
The assessment by the doctors was deeply influenced by it, because in that period, while I was admitted to the psychiatric hospital, first of all, the admitting doctor, a general practitioner, I must add this, I had a certificate released by a psychiatrist that I was okay, and a GP admitted me. So the GP was influenced to the degree, in as far as he admitted me based on this claim. And then while I was at the hospital, my husband added further allegations. For example, I had asked, my brother-in-law had asked me to make a sort of a sham speech for a carnival event. So I had put down some notes for this carnival speech, as you might do, jot down things on notes. And these notepads were then handed over to the psychiatric hospital. And the treating doctor asked me, what are these pads for? And I said, I've jotted this down for the carnival speech. And the doctor said, no, Mrs. Boss, these are your very confused thoughts. I told the doctor, please hand over these notes to me. I'll make them into a carnival speech. And the doctor simply grinned at me and smiled at me and said, I'll put this away. Well, how can I tackle this? I'm speechless. Could I bring that across? Fine.
We now call Anja Link. Yes? Bitte.
My name is Anja Link. I'm sitting here on behalf of a large number of women who've experienced similar things in psychiatric clinics. I spent 3 years without break in a psychiatric clinic and will probably still be there today if I'd not shown so much will to survive and had so much strength inside me. It's important to describe this spiral of violence in psychiatry as far as is possible given the short amount of time that I have available and to draw attention to a number of specific situations. In my family, I was subjected to sexual molestation for a period of 12 years. That stopped when I was taken to the psychiatric clinic for the first time at the age of 16. My father said he would not leave me alone if I told them anything. In my environment, it was quite clear that I was in need of assistance, even though I had not said anything for fear of stimulating the anger of my father. I was then treated for androgenic depression using medicines. No other treatment was considered to be necessary. A GP knew very well that I had huge problems and discovered scars from attempts at suicide, and he sent me to a psychiatric clinic immediately after a brief reception talk in the presence of my mother. I was diagnosed as being a borderline personality, and that has stuck to the present day. I was then taken to a ward for adults, although I was only 16 at the time, although there was a youth psychiatric department in the building. I think there was lots of opportunity for therapy were missed here. After 6 weeks of treatment there, which consisted of giving me neuroleptic drugs, it was stated that my situation had deteriorated unexpectedly, and therefore my parents had to decide whether they wished to take me back home or whether to have me taken to a secure unit. So I was taken back to a relatively unchanged situation. It was not given any further assistance. After a further attempt at suicide, I was sent back home after receiving surgical treatment. And at the age of 19, I left my parental home, started studying and engaging in psychotherapeutic treatment. For the first time, or at least that was my impression, I was treated as an integrated personality and not as somebody who had had a diagnosis imposed upon him. This therapy continued on into the following years. For organizational reasons on the part of the statutory health funds, it was only possible for this to take place once a year for a few weeks only. And in the case of acute crisis, then I turned to the psychiatrists. But that was basically no more than being kept quiet and immobile by means of neuroleptic drugs. Mostly, on such occasions, I was locked up. And as part of my studies, I had a placement in the children's and youth psychiatric department. So, as you can see, I was in a position to continue my life. And this children and youth psychiatric clinic was in the same building. And for some inexplicable reason, my diagnosis was made public and I had to leave the building immediately and terminate my placement. I told that to my psychiatrist and she assumed that I was in danger of committing suicide, although I'd indicated nothing to that end. And this was the beginning of a 3-year stay in a psychiatric clinic. I was not allowed back home. And in order to overcome my crisis, I was immediately treated like a serious criminal, was not allowed to leave the ward, had to take the medicines that I did not want to take. I was under permanent observation. And with my agreement, because I wished to undergo psychotherapy, I was taken to the university clinic at Erlangen, where I was to be given psychotherapy. I was immediately classified as a serious or borderline patient, was not allowed to take this therapy and was taken to a secure unit instead, where I spent the next 7 months. There was no therapy there, of course. What I thought was very serious at the university clinic was, like other patients, I had to take medicines that were still at the test stage. I was then transferred from Erlangen to the university clinic at Mainz. The reason why I originally sought help was overlooked almost completely, even though it was still known, there was no doubt about this on the part of the psychiatrist, because I repeated the original reason time and again. Focus was placed on my symptoms, in particular that I'd done harm to myself, and of course my health deteriorated. In this system, I was subjected to the same situation I'd encountered in my own family at home. I was then to undergo behavioral therapy, and in the course of my stay there in Mainz, I was virtually not allowed to leave the ward at all, given that this doctor was also of the opinion that that she couldn't help me anymore. I was then transferred back to Erlangen. In Erlangen, I had to undergo very humiliating situations and treatments. There were bodily searches, which meant I had to undress completely and to check myself for any damage I'd done to myself. I was only allowed to take a bath under supervision, and I wasn't allowed out at all. I was then taken to a semi-open ward, although I was not allowed to leave the premises either, because that was part of the behavioral therapy, at least that was alleged. Part of this behavioral therapy was that I was gradually isolated to an increasing extent. I was not allowed to have any more visitors initially. After that, I was not allowed to telephone. My personal mail was kept from me. I was not allowed to move around freely on my own or in the ward, and had to remain for the most part in my room. And then my personal belongings were taken away from me. I was only allowed to keep but 2 books and 4 cassettes. I didn't find that very helpful at all. And my situation was not changed by the fact that every now and then I was taken into the closed unit again. In order to justify these coercive measures, legal support was provided. After 11 months that I spent in this ward, I was not any better off, understandably. The doctors didn't know what to do and released me after they had taken my self-confidence that I'd had beforehand away from me. I only spent a few days at home, and as a result of an acute crisis, my carer ordered me to go back to the clinic again, and after medical treatment, after I'd lost blood as a result of the wounds I'd inflicted upon myself, and I was in agreement with this measure, but I would not have gone voluntarily back into a psychiatric clinic again. I think it's quite understandable that after 2 years of psychiatric treatment, it's not possible for me to find my way around in everyday normal life again after this long period of isolation. And back in the psychiatric clinic again, all sorts of means were used to try and break my will. Again, it was treated as a serious criminal. I was observed virtually all the time, was not allowed to leave the ward, and when I was kept quiet or fixed, this meant that my bed was kept under observation. Other patients were able to observe what was going on. Other visitors were coming past and thought that perhaps they ought to talk to me. So there was no possibility for me to ward off these humiliating gazes because I was tied down. What was worse was the treatment with medicines, because neuroleptic drugs, from my point of view, is not indicated at all. At reception, the doctor told me that I was to be given drugs to help me. I made it quite clear to him that I did not want to take any drugs at all. He immediately told me that I had no other choice whatsoever, because if I did not take these drugs voluntarily, they would then administer them forcibly. And then I found out that a decision has been taken by the court without the person signing the document having seen me at all beforehand. forced administration of drugs I was familiar with. I'd seen that happen with other patients, and I wanted to spare myself. That's why I called my carer and hoped that she would support me in this respect, because these medicines were, after all, only designed to keep me quiet. And the carer then told me that she couldn't help me either. I should simply take the drugs. And I realized I had no chance and tried to be as cooperative as possible in order to have an influence on the selection of the medicines concerned. Next morning, I told the doctor the neuroleptic drugs that had helped me to a certain extent in the past, and also indicated to him that I could not tolerate Sertoil. And in the past, there have been serious side effects as a result of taking this drug. However, I will be prepared to take everything else, provided if I did not have to take Sertoil. In the evening, the doctor then told me that they had decided to give me Sertoil 4 times a day, 60 drops. As a result of the loss of blood, I was relatively weak physically, and of course this dose was far too high and constituted a considerable risk. I was then given a choice of whether I would take these drugs voluntarily as drops or as a depot injection. The doctor said that I would realize immediately what was right, so I opted for the drops so that they could then dispense with giving me Sertoil afterwards. A doctor and a male nurse accompanied me later on, and what I didn't understand afterwards, I was tied down again, although it was clear that in the course of the day I would drop into a deep sleep, and the dose was not changed. And only after a few weeks did I succeed in spitting out the drops occasionally. I was then ultimately to be given another chance, was to be transferred to Freiburg, given therapy there. However, it struck me as if I were being treated as a guinea pig. And the psychiatrist was to see in healing me, but my stay in Freiburg, based on the experience that I gathered in the realm of psychiatry, was to fight my way out of psychiatry. Again, an attempt was made to give me a behavioral therapy, very abstruse. What I didn't like at all was the video recordings that were made for teaching purposes, and everybody had to document their agreement with that. After I'd spent 6 months there, I was released. I did not give the doctors any occasion to keep me there at all. I then was not in a very good condition after 3 years of psychiatric treatment, and dispense with any further attempts at getting help so that people couldn't bring me back into the realm of psychiatry again.
The third witness in this group is, unlike the other two, an academic who teaches in the field of gender studies, and her testimony should be seen in that light. Michaela Walser, would you make your statement, please?
My name is Michael Walser. I was asked during the break whether I would be prepared to provide support here up on the panel, and if I were needed, then I can say something. If it's not necessary, then I will not do that, because I think that the two women themselves have succeeded in speaking for themselves. If it's necessary, of course, I will add whatever I can by way of help.
With you that the two witnesses have been both very candid and very lucid. So we are now at the question point. Yes,
Alon Harel from the Hebrew Investor. Actually, I have two questions.